People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Redevelopment agencies have played a critical role in the funding of affordable housing, generating $1 billion a year. Until now. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, we'll talk about how redevelopment agencies might survive the budget acts and why Governor Brown and the California legislature voted to eliminate local development agencies unless they pay the state every year to help balance the budget. My guest is Lynn Hutchins, a partner at Goldfarb & Lipman, a leading redevelopment law firm in California representing many communities that have redevelopment agencies. Welcome, Lynn.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let's start out by defining our terms. What exactly does a redevelopment agency do, and how is it that they generate revenue for local governments?
Okay, redevelopment agencies are local government entities that are created and controlled by cities and counties in California. And they have powers to revitalize deteriorated and blighted areas in their jurisdictions, which are known as project areas. They are not taxing agencies into themselves, but receive what is called tax increment from the local property tax dollars. We probably need to step back and explain a bit how property taxes work in California.
It's not just me, right? Because I was going to ask... That didn't entirely explain it to me, so that's
no, great. We're not there yet. We need to go on a bit. Anyway, the property taxes in California are equal to about 1% of the assessed valuation of taxable properties. And the initial valuation of a property is typically the value of that property, and it's not adjusted to market value every year under Proposition 13. It's only adjusted when the property is improved. For instance, if you construct an addition to your home, your assessed valuation would go up. If you sell the property, the new sales price of the property would become its assessed valuation. Or there's also what we call an inflation factor, which is a yearly adjustment that can go up to 2% per year. And in certain circumstances, the valuation can also be reduced. So when a redevelopment project area is formed, the assessed valuation of the taxable properties within that area is determined. And that's called the base year valuation. And the property taxes, that 1% number that's derived from any increases in the valuation above the base year valuation will flow to the redevelopment agencies. So for example, if the base year assessed valuation on a project area is $1 million, and in the current year the assessed valuation is $2 million, 1% of that difference in valuation, $1 million, is $10,000, and that would flow to the redevelopment agency as tax increment.
Now, does it matter who owned this particular property initially?
No.
Not at all.
No.
So it is only because a locality is going to improve it that they get this tax revenue?
What happens is the redevelopment agency will take the tax increment that flows to it. What happens is it flows to the redevelopment agency instead of some of the other taxing jurisdictions. And then 20% of that tax increment funding is actually allocated to affordable housing. And some of the money is also shared with the other taxing entities, such as schools. And then what the redevelopment agency does is it uses it in a variety of ways to stimulate revitalization of that area. So, for instance, the types of projects a redevelopment agency might invest in are affordable housing, certain public works, cleanup of environmentally threatened and rundown properties that can assist new commercial and industrial development in particular ways. And the idea is to stimulate kind of the economy in that particular area to revitalize it, but more particularly to improve the physical setting of the area. So if, for instance, the sewer system needs to be upgraded, that's something a redevelopment agency can do. And by upgrading the sewer system, that will incent new development in the area, because then, new businesses don't have to figure out a way to pay for an improvement to the sewer system so they can establish their business there, as an example.
Not that you were in on the decision, Lynn, but can you speculate as to why the legislature felt they had to do away with redevelopment agencies or threaten them in this way?
Well, certainly what they say is the state is facing a huge fiscal crisis, and they are looking at any source to fix the problem. They believe that because the property tax dollars from the local property taxes are directed to the redevelopment agencies instead of certain other local taxing entities such as schools, that by redirecting those funds back to those other local entities such as schools, that will save the state money, at least in fiscal year 2001-2012, because in the new legislation that just was adopted, the redirection of property tax revenues from the redevelopment agencies and to the schools will count against the school's Proposition 98 limit only for fiscal year 11-12. And what happens in that situation, if the school's local property taxes don't reach a particular limit known as the Prop 98 limit, the state backfills those funds up to the limit. So the state believes by redirecting the funds, it will save money in school funding. In the later years, the property tax revenues that are being redirected from redevelopment agencies into schools and other fiscal districts will actually be outside the Prop 98 limit. So they believe it will enhance school funding in the future. But basically, they were looking at redevelopment agencies and thinking that they held a good pot of money and that that would be part of the way to solve the budget crisis. And particularly for fiscal year 11-12, they're looking at $1.7 billion that they'd like to redirect from redevelopment agencies. And in future years, it's in the order of $400 million.
But the state budget, even though it eliminates the redevelopment agencies, allows them to stay alive if they make certain payments to the state. Can you explain that payment structure, how that works?
Well, the payment structure is very complicated. In fact, there's a set of three formulas. But basically what happens is each community will have the option to decide if they want to elect to continue voluntarily their redevelopment program. And if they do, they will need to make a payment. The payment technically doesn't go to the state. It actually goes to the county auditor controller in the county for that jurisdiction, and then the county will redistribute the property tax dollars in a set formula, but basically they go to some transit agencies, some fire protection agencies, and some school entities.
I'm starting to understand why we need lawyers in this world.
Well, yeah. And basically what happens is the redevelopment, each agency kind of pays their pro rata share over the amount of money that's collected by all redevelopment agencies. So you basically take that particular agency's share versus every other agency's share. You come up with a ratio and you multiply that ratio by $1.7 billion, at least for the first year.
Do you have any sense whether this plan is going to work?
Do I have a sense of whether the state's right about their budget figures? I know that a lot of people disagree with them. I'm not an economist, but there seems to be some misinformation out there in terms of what the actual budget impact will be. But is it really going to solve the budget crisis? No. Is it a drop in the bucket? Maybe. Are you asking, are agencies opting into the voluntary plan or are they opting out of it?
Well, that was my next question. There are something like, 400 redevelopment agencies in the state of California. Do you have any sense about how many of them will be able to make those payments?
I understand from the State Association of California Redevelopment Agencies, which is known as CRA, they did a survey of their members earlier this year. And I understand from their executive director that they got about 200 responses to their request. And of those 200 responses, about 80% of the agencies are electing to opt into the voluntary program, and about 20% are dropping out. Now, those are not official decisions and they're not binding. And we're kind of thinking aloud here that maybe the agencies that are electing to not participate may not have responded to them, but it's a little hard to know until every agency's made their decision.
When do the local jurisdictions have to decide if they want to try to keep their agencies alive?
technically, they have to adopt an ordinance no later than November 1st, electing to opt into the voluntary program. However, if they have not done that, they will dissolve. And it's interesting, the legislation actually says the agencies dissolve on October 1st, even though the communities have until November 1st to make this election. So what the legislation has is this non-binding resolution that they're supposed to adopt by October 1st if they're intending to elect in. So my guess is we'll have a very good idea by October 1st.
What can a city do, Lynn, if they can't make the payments? Is their only choice at that point to go out of business? And is that what's going to happen?
Yes. That's what's going to
so
happen.
So there are agencies that will go out of business as part of this legislation.
Absolutely. Probably the largest one that folks know about is San Jose.
Wow.
Which is I think everybody knows San Jose's had a lot of fiscal crisis in the last few years, and their agency will definitely go out of business.
Well, we
except there's a
lawsuit.
Yeah, you're going to go there, aren't you?
There had to be a lawsuit, right?
Yeah, so what the California Redevelopment Agency Association, the CRA, the League of Cities, the City of Union City, and the City of San Jose have filed a petition on Monday, July 18th with the California Supreme Court, which in California is our highest court, in kind of an unusual move to go straight to the top because of the time frames and the drastic results that might result if this legislation were to go into effect. And the Supreme Court has asked the state to respond no later than Wednesday, July 27th. So they're at least taking an interest in the case so far. Whether they decide to actually take the case, we don't know yet. And the Supreme Court, the way it functions, it actually does have discretion whether to take cases or not. So we're waiting to see what the result of that would be. But hopefully we'll know the first week of August, although the court doesn't have any official time frame it has to respond by.
I see. So we may have to bring you back on the show at some
we'll
point
see
in
what
the
happens.
Future.
We'll see what happens. I was actually encouraged to see that the court was asking for a response so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. Well, we hope that's a good sign. So, Lynn, we know that tax increment revenue, the main source of payments to the state, has been shrinking. What happens to poorer communities that can't make the payment? How are they supposed to deal with all the challenges that obviously are not going to go away? Is there going to be some other entity that replaces redevelopment agencies or some other mechanism for cities and localities to be able to make improvements?
The only thing that's been proposed is a program that's currently in place called the Infrastructure Financing District Authority. And I'll have to tell you, that law has been in effect at least, I think, since the mid-80s. And we only know of one or two of those districts that have been set up in that entire time. They don't generate nearly the funding, and they're very difficult to establish. So I don't think most folks in the economic development, community development field feel that it's going to be a very effective replacement program. We've heard of nothing else being proposed.
So what about affordable housing? Groups like Eden are very reliant on redevelopment funding to build new affordable housing. So if an agency goes out of business, what happens to the funds that they've accumulated?
Okay, well, first of all, if the agency has accumulated funds in what we call its housing set-aside fund, as I mentioned earlier, 20% of the tax increment that an agency collects has to be set aside for affordable housing. And so under this legislation, if an agency decides to dissolve, that existing balance in its housing fund is actually going to be used to apply to any housing debt that the agency may have incurred, but it will not be programmed to go directly into new housing or rehabilitation of housing. And if an agency does go out of business, there will no longer be housing set aside for that particular community. And it will be a pretty dramatic impact on affordable housing here in California. Redevelopment has been the largest source of affordable housing funds since at least the mid-80s. And frankly, the state and federal housing programs are dwarfed in terms of the amount of dollars that are in their programs compared to the redevelopment program. And the other key benefit of the redevelopment housing funds is that they're available for land acquisition and pre-development stages of an affordable housing project where there often is not any other source of funding. So it's been a very valuable tool for housing developers. And even with some agencies opting out, and not all agencies opting out, as you mentioned, there has been a decline in tax increment over the years, and there'll be a continued decline, clearly. And yes, affordable housing groups such as Eden are going to have to find new sources for funding, which, frankly, is still a very real need in the state. I heard on the radio just this morning that in San Jose, rents have gone up over 12% in the last year, and in the rest of the Bay Area, something like 7%, which is certainly faster than the rate that incomes are going up. It's a very hard...
That's for sure. So here's the thing I don't understand. Since communities are required to build affordable housing by the state, how are these projects supposed to be funded now?
That will be a very interesting question.
I see.
Fair, I don't have the answer.
I'm not the only one asking that question.
No. Frequently unanswered questions is what we're thinking is the result of this legislation. It's going to be a tough row. There's also been some court cases recently that limit the ability of a jurisdiction to actually impose affordable housing requirements on private developers in certain circumstances.
Oh, so I bet there are people who are definitely fighting for that, too.
Yes. So there is, I think affordable housing is going to be a very challenging period in the next few years, both monetarily and regulatory.
Right. Well, I would love to have ended on a happier note, but
yes,
let's go back to your happy note, which is that the state Supreme Court responded quickly to the lawsuit. So that is a positive note.
I think so. At least they're paying attention to it, and they're taking it seriously, and they're taking the time frames seriously. Yes, we'll see what happens. We have no idea what they're going to do with the case. I don't want to misjudge that at all.
Sure, or prejudge, right? If people want to keep up with this, and is there a website to which you can direct them where they can, keep updated on what happens with this case?
Our office is actually publishing updates, and our website is www.goldfarblittman.com. You can also go to the California Redevelopment Agency's website, and the Supreme Court actually is accessible by the web too, and you can search for the case name, which starts with California Redevelopment Association, and follow the case that way as well.
Excellent. And that's Goldfarb Lippman, LIPMAN.com.
Correct.
Lynn Hutchins, thank you so much for enlightening us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.